And welcome in to You're the Cure with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. That's right. Check out VeritasMedical.com for archived shows and other important information to help you regain your health. VeritasMedical.com. Let me say good morning once again to Dr. Ben Edwards, MD.
Hey, Wade. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
Doing great.
Good to talk to you once again.
Yeah, we've had some recorded shows. Good to be back in the studio.
Absolutely. So what's going on in your world?
Well, excuse me. Just trying to teach people how to be healthy. Same old, same old.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
The world, excuse me, got
Would
my
you
throat.
Like, oh, you got Let some water.
Get a little water here. You know, the world, I think, is more open to hearing the truth, or more people seeking the truth, seeking health and wellness. When they start to realize, which more and more are, that the folks that are susceptible to COVID-19 and other infections are the same ones who have chronic disease.
Oh, yeah.
Heart disease, cancer, Alzheimer's, autoimmune disease, over 100 different autoimmune diseases these days. This modern epidemic of chronic disease, it's just overwhelming society. 54% of kids have disease, chronic disease. Now we have the sickest kids in the world of the industrialized world. We have the sickest adults of the industrialized world. Just saw the preliminary data for 2020. Life expectancy for the United States went down in a year, I think 77, from 78 to 77, and that's a huge jump. Usually it's a couple months, plus or minus, that it'll change. And looking at the data on all-cause mortality, it's very interesting because you think, oh, COVID killed way more people. All-cause mortality, the upticks, and this is out of, I'll find the study, I'll quote it in a minute. But basically, the age groups and the young people, it's age 29 to 45 that saw these huge increases of non-COVID deaths. So they didn't have the breakdown of what those were yet. I know suicides are way up. But the point being, we're just not a healthy society in general. And we need to address those root causes of susceptibility to COVID-19 and chronic disease both. And they're all one in the same. And I'll let our audience guess what that is. It starts with an M, mitochondrial dysfunction. Vaccine injury, mitochondrial dysfunction. You're more susceptible to vaccine injury. That's Dr. Kelly out of Johns Hopkins. I've often quoted his own words, talking about Yates being vaccine injured, but it was because his mitochondria were susceptible. His mitochondria were dysfunctional. His brain mitochondria could not make enough energy. Dr. Kelly himself out of Hopkins said that. He didn't mention the clearing the exhaust part. Our listeners would know that too, though. If that mitochondria can't make energy and can't clear exhaust, you're going to be more prone to vaccine injury, to glyphosate injury, to COVID injury, to every injury you can think of. We label these different diseases, heart disease and cancer and Alzheimer's and COVID, but drill down and it's the same thing. The mitochondria aren't working. It sounds too simple, but it's exactly what's happening. And when you can't make energy and you can't clear exhaust, you're more susceptible to bugs moving in like parasites. And we're going to talk about that a little bit today. Why is this ivermectin working so well? Let's get COVID out of the way, and then we're going to bring in Morley Robbins. It's first Monday, and we haven't had Morley on in a few months, so we're super excited to have him, and I want to give him the floor because I know he's bursting with research and data and thoughts to support the theory that the root cause protocol addresses, which is mineral dysregulation and imbalance, causes mitochondrial dysfunction, and that sets the stage for all these quote-unquote inflammatory diseases from cancer to Alzheimer's. Real quick, though, I don't remember if we've gone over this, so I'm going to be fast because I think we may have the WHO. They came out in January and said the PCR test, we have a big problem here. The cycle threshold's too high. Everyone tone it down. So we should see a dramatic drop in cases just based off that, because when the cycle threshold, which is how many copies you're going to make of this genetic material that you swabbed out of your sinuses, when it's at 40, you're going to have a ton of false positives, upwards of 90%. The cycle threshold needs to be closer to 20 to 23. So the WHO said everyone needs to tone down that cycle threshold and we'll get a lot more accuracy in our PCR testing. Of course, we've been saying this, and other doctors, not just us, but have been saying this for months and months and months. New York Times came out in August and said 85 to 90% of people who tested positive in July with the cycle threshold of 40 would have been negative if the threshold were 30 cycles. Dr. Fauci himself said, if, quote, if you get a cycle threshold of 35 or more, the chances of it being replication confident are minuscule. You almost never can culture a virus from a 37 threshold cycle. So again, the WHO came out in January and said, let's tone down the cycle. So that's great news. Then they came out shortly after that, and this is January 21st, and they said, our clinical diagnostic criteria needs to change for COVID. We can't just base it off one test, one PCR test. We need to consider the patient's history and clinical symptoms. Amazing. We need to consider the patient in front of us, and do they look like they're sick? So that's great. We tighten up the diagnostic criteria for COVID-19 as of January 21st. That was a WHO information bulletin out to all healthcare providers. So again, case numbers should start dropping dramatically from that. Last thing I want to mention, the NIH, this was December 31st, I believe. Here it is. Yep. A meta-analysis of clinical trials of ivermectin to treat COVID-19 infection. December 31st, 2020. A WHO-sponsored review of ivermectin trials indicates an 83% reduction in COVID mortality. 83% reduction. The NIH came out shortly after that and upgraded their recommendation from we don't recommend to we neither recommend against or for. So they went to neutral. So that's good. That will encourage more doctors to use ivermectin. And the ivermectin data is really overwhelming. You can go to COVID19criticalcare.com, listen to Dr. Peter Corey. He's doing a weekly webinars now to try to get the word out. They did the big press conference in the fall. Then he testified twice in front of the Senate committee. That was in December, I believe. He's done multiple webinars since then. The data that continues to pour in is really overwhelming. So go listen to Dr. Peter Corey, Critical Care, COVID19criticalcare.com. I'm going to give a presentation later in the week about all-cause mortality, how many people died total in the world and in our country and in different countries. And what you'll see when I present these slides later this week in my video is it's basically I'm looking at cumulative death, England and Wales, 2019-2020 compared to previous years. So they compared it to 1999 because there was a strong flu season, 1999-2000, and the lines are identical. In Germany, I'm looking at 1990 every year, total mortality from 1990 to 2020. It's right in line. I'm looking at age-adjusted death rates per 1,000 in the United States from 1900 to 2020. Same thing is this is not very far out of line. In fact, the last time we had the same deaths per 1,000 in the United States was in 2002. So we dipped more in the 2015, 16, 17, 18. We're around the 2.8 to 2.9 million. Now our estimates are 3.2 million. So yep, a little bit of uptick from the last couple years, but in line with other previous flu years in my lifetime. John Hopkins did a study and saw that all the top killers in 2020, the data is we saw a decrease in all the top 10 killers, heart disease, cancer, Alzheimer's, COPD, etc. So obviously there's been mislabeling of deaths. And then there's a great article by the American Institute of Economic Research, Death by Lockdown, and they go through in detail 100,000 excess deaths due to drug overdose, suicide, alcoholism, homicide, untreated depression, and medical care that was not sought, like preventative medical care because of the lockdowns. 40% of excess deaths in Hispanic were not COVID-related, 46% not COVID-related in blacks and whites, 38% increased excess death not related to COVID. 25 to 44-year-olds, 77% of excess deaths not COVID-related. 65 and older, 39% of excess deaths not COVID-related. Okay, that's the end of my COVID talk. Just want to get that out there. mortality for this germ is right in line with some bad flus, and the lockdown measures appear to have been very detrimental to people's health also, so that combination caused 100,000 to 200,000 excess death, not the 1 to 2 million excess death that the models originally indicated could happen. We'll talk about vaccines another day. That's a whole nother topic. I want to bring in Morley Robbins, Root Cause Protocol, rcp123.org. And I'm excited to talk about and get Morley's take on ivermectin, because there's a connection. Parasites and ivermectin and copper, terrain theory versus germ theory. You have a dysfunctional mitochondria. You have cells that can't defend themselves, and parasites can move in and further disrupt your copper. These bugs have a relationship with iron and with copper. So we're going to talk about that today and some other things with Morley Robbins. Morley, welcome to the show. Thank you for being with us today.
You bet. Glad to be here. It's been a while.
It has been. How was your winter?
It's almost over. We're now 70 degrees here in North Carolina. So it's, we didn't have that frostbite that some people in the middle of the country had, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, Lubbock was, we definitely got cold, but our electrical grids mostly stayed up. So we fared much better than Central Texas and North Central Texas did.
Yeah. Listening to your opening volley, which was excellent, I think people are more open to the truth. But I think there's a fundamental premise that we have to really keep driving home. That most people, I'll just restrict it to the U.S., to the continental U.S., maybe all of the U.S., but certainly people in North America are more iron toxic than other continents, simply because of the food system.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people say, well, I'm anemic. Well, again, we're back to the same old saw of iron in the tissue is different than iron in the blood. And what we're designed to do is have iron circulating in the blood, feeding the tissue, but not residing there, not staying there. And there's a very basic axiom. People who are more iron toxic are more fearful. And we spell it differently, F-E-A-R-F-U-L, so people can see the symbol for iron. And what we've learned over the course of last year, but I think what you just summarized is a very powerful set of data that said that we were fearful about nothing. That yes, there was people that are chronically ill do get sick, but they weren't succumbing to COVID. That was all a political game. And I think it's important for people to realize that there is a cure. We spell cure differently, too. C-U-R-E. So we can see the symbol for copper. And what was a surprise to me was to find a very significant study from 2008, 12 years before all of the insanity of last year, where they were using bioavailable copper to kill the SARS virus. And what's important for people to realize is, outside of our conversations, I don't think anyone was talking about copper as a solution to this crisis. And that's unfortunate. But I think, as you know, people are beginning to wake up. And it's almost too simple. Well, wait, no. Well, why would I be told to take a lot of zinc? Why would I be told to take a lot of vitamin D? Why would I be told to take a lot of ascorbic acid? Why would I be told to take a lot of antibiotics? Well, I'm not going to answer those questions. I think by now people need to know that there's a lot of bad information that's been handed out, starting with the need to distance, starting with the need to be in lockdown, starting with the need to be wearing face diapers, and the Danish mask study of 60,000 people proved that the whole psychodrama of masks is just that, there is no benefit. And I think it's important for people to realize that this has been a very uncomfortable year, and we're now coming out of it, but people need to learn to ask better questions, and I think we need to demand much better answers, especially from their elected officials and from their so-called health experts in government positions, because we have been horribly misled as a nation. And I think I absolutely applaud all that you're doing, Ben. One suggestion on your tagline about regaining your health, I think it should be regain and retain your health, because that's really what it's about. You got to get back to homeostasis and then keep it there. And what's the most simple way to do that? Root cause protocol.
Yep.
Get bioavailable copper back into the body and then get out of the way.
Yeah.
Because what's become very clear to me over the last few months, like my focus has sharpened even more since we last talked, but there really is a blueprint that runs the human metabolism. And that blueprint runs on a blue protein. And that blue protein is called ceruloplasmin. And we've talked about it many times. And it really is no more complicated than that. And again, in a hyper-sophisticated society, people, there's got to be a really complicated answer.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, people who have high IQ, which are drawn to programs like this, we have two genetic defects. We're control freaks, and we love complexity.
Yep.
But what's the control side? When does stress begin for someone with high IQ? When they feel out of control. Mm-hmm. And that was 2020. Everyone who's listening to this program, everyone that you know, was severely compromised by the loss of control, and they lost mega minerals over the last 15 months. And it's important for them to begin to restore and regain those minerals. But the other is we lack complexity. And what you and I are offering is a very simple solution. And when you think about what you were talking about with ivermectin, I think it's important for people to understand that this is only the second drug in the history of the Nobel Committee to win a Nobel Prize.
Hmm.
Second drug, 2015. And it's not like, oh, wow, this is from Bob's University. This is a highly prestigious medication that's particularly used in the farming industry for livestock, because who gets a lot of parasites? Animal. And what's really comical is, in the course of my lifetime, I've had 7 dogs. And I have methodically and religiously dewormed them every 6 months, never thinking that I was getting worms from them. As most listeners hearing what we're saying right now are like, and it's interesting, I've got several friends now from India. And when they were growing up, they always dewormed every 6 months, just like their pets, and they used one of two things, either Epsom salt or castor oil. And both of them flushed their system, and they were fine for 6 months. And I've got a physician friend, graduate of the Naval Academy, the Submariner Nuke School, and then decided to become a doctor. And he said, actually, medical school was a joke compared to Sub-Nuke School. He said, based upon his reading of the book that I know you want to talk about by Robert Farmer, he said, I think all humans need to be dewormed every 6 months now.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting is, and you can comment on this, he said most doctors never get a course in parasitology. But he got his MD degree at the Uniformed Services Medical School in Bethesda. And because he was going to be stationed overseas, he wanted to take a course in parasitology, so he knew what he was up against. He said, I was an odd duck to do that. Most physicians have never been exposed to any kind of of academic, clinical, or in-depth information about helminths and the function and the metabolism of these parasites. So I think it's a glaring blind spot for organized medicine.
Yeah.
What don't they know? They don't know about mineral metabolism. They don't know about oxygen metabolism. They don't know about energy metabolism. And then to round out the quadrant, they know nothing about parasite metabolism and how they live on iron and they disrupt copper. And then we've just completed the circle in terms of why all these chronic conditions are so prevalent. And what was the real bombshell for me was reading a patent application a few weeks ago. This is from 2017, so it's fairly recent. And what they were doing was trying to address the demyelination that occurs in the nervous system. And so people are familiar with their appliances and have a wire, and the wire has a cover. Well, our nerves are the exact same way. They've got to have a cover, and it's called myelin. Myelin is made from cholesterol. You know, about 70% of the cholesterol in our brain goes to make myelin in our nerves, in our brain. It's a really big deal. Like, and who's recycling the cholesterol? Copper. Ding, ding, ding. But what's important is that at patent, they were using T4, a thyroid medication for T4, which is a surrogate for serum copper, by the way. And they were using a synthetic drug that was mimicking a nuclear regulatory protein that's involved in making myelin. Well, in a normal, healthy human being, that would be a derivative of retinol. And what was significant were two things. One, this one mechanism of myelin sheath dysregulation was attributable to 66 different nervous conditions, including Lou Gehrig's disease, Huntington's disease, Parkinson's, and Alzheimer's. All tracing back to this one mechanism that wasn't working, but the real bombshell was the sentence in the middle of the patent application explaining that, and this also affects autoimmune conditions, and in fact, these are parasitic infections that affect this function. Well, Dr. Van, I almost fell out of my chair when I read that. We're talking about a highly sophisticated patent application using synthetic drugs to solve a very fundamental metabolic function that our nervous system runs on, that was trying to overcorrect for parasitic infections.
Wow.
And I was like, yeah, that was a wow. I was like, my gosh, at least they came out and said it. And then what they pointed out was that this is true for all autoimmune conditions. One of the over 100 autoimmune conditions?
Yeah.
And I think what we're bumping up against is a very uncomfortable truth that, you know, again, after three generations of dramatic changes in the food system, where they changed farming practices, they changed food processing practices dramatically, taking, you know, fats and cholesterol and retinol out of our diet, basically preventing copper uptake in the plant, thereby preventing it getting into the animal, and then flooding us with sugars and high fructose corn syrup and 9 different forms of iron. And they basically destroyed the blueprint that our body runs on. The body really knows what to do if it has the basic nutrient building parts.
Right,
and it's a little unsettling to realize that after three generations, I think what was most alarming about your comments is the mortality rate of the people 20 to 45. That's frightening. That's the next generation of leaders, and it's like, you know, I think we're on the cusp of a very unsettling period of recovery. That people have been so spooked by a pandemic And what they've got to do is wake up to the reality of, how do I regain and retain my health?
Mm-hmm.
That's really what it's about. And get people to focus in and zero in on that blueprint and the nutrients that are needed to restore that blue protein.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a huge take-home message that, of course, our long-term listeners already know, but new listeners need to really get a hold of, is all this disease we're talking about, this is new. This is a new phenomenon over the past 100 years since we've changed our diet and farming practices, and we'll get into that more after the break, the details of that. But each one of these things, from high fructose corn syrup to the use of Roundup glyphosate, the iron added to the diet, each one of these things has specific identifiable consequences to our mitochondria. And all these diseases are mitochondrial related. You can go read books on this. I have books on my shelf in my office about how Alzheimer's is a mitochondrial disease, and heart disease is a mitochondrial disease, and cancer is a mitochondrial disease, and vaccine injury is a mitochondrial disease, all these different things, autoimmune, all of it. So what's happened to the mitochondria over the past 100 years? This is a new and identifiable thing, and it's not our genes, and we can correct it.
Well, I think just to emphasize, because I know we have to go to a break, people have been led to believe that the nucleus runs the cell. It doesn't. It's a Xerox machine. That's all it is. And it takes its cues from the mitochondria. Mitochondria, where the real rubber hits the road, that's where cholesterol gets recycled. That's where heme gets reproduced. That's where iron sulfur clusters gets made. That's where calcium gets recycled. I mean, it's just, we could go on for an hour just talking about what the mitochondria do, and we've been led to believe that the nucleus is in charge. And guess where the real breakdown is in gene defects? It's the mitochondria DNA, not the nuclear DNA.
Mm-hmm.
That's like, oh my gosh, the significant breakdown in metabolic function, because the mitochondrial DNA are not getting the juice that they need in order to do their job properly. We can leave it on that.
Well, and I just want to throw in, I don't have the citation for this, but I've read studies that they took a cancer cell, and they will take the nucleus out of the cancer cell and put in a healthy nucleus from a healthy cell, and the cancer just keeps on going. And then they do the opposite of that. They take the mitochondria out of that cancer cell, put a healthy mitochondria in there, and the cancer goes away. It's all about the mitochondria. The genes in the DNA in the nucleus are just responding to the reactive oxygen species, the free radicals, all this toxic waste that we can't clear out of the cell because the mitochondria is not working right because of this dysregulation of minerals, primarily rooted in the diet. And we'll go to the break with this, the root cause protocol Morley's mentioned, rcp123.org. Y'all can go look that up, download his ebook. But you'll see quickly that there's starts and stops, and it's basically, in a nutshell, get back to eating how your great-grandparents used to eat. And because we are so deficient and so behind the eight ball, here's some supplements that'll bring you up to speed a little quicker, because it's really hard with modern food. Even if you start to eat real food, it's hard to get these nutrients back into us. It's all about the diet. And if we could get back to regenerative agriculture and steward the land the right way and put where there's minerals and vitamins in our food again, both animal and plant, we wouldn't need supplements. We wouldn't need root cause protocols. This all just, it boils down to this basic concept of, our ancestors did not have these diseases. Our ancestors were healthy. Dr. Weston A. Price showed this clearly in the 1920s, 14 different people groups from around the world he spent time with over 20 years, and he documented if they lived and ate like their ancestors, the villages were healthy, no disease, pristine health, dental health, and physical health. Dr. Price was a dentist. But the villages that started to consume processed flour and sugar started to deteriorate in their health. It was correlated very well. In the late 1800s, George Catlin, an American painter, he left the city of New York and Boston and London, where the mortality rate for infants was 50%. All those childhood illnesses, germs, were killing kids. Diphtheria and pertussis and measles and all these germs were 50%. It was 50-50 if you were going to make it to your fifth birthday in these big cities. And he traveled west, and he went and spent time with American Indians, Native Americans, up and North and South America too. many, many dozens and dozens and dozens of different tribes, and he was asking the chiefs of each tribe, how many of your babies die? And they would give a bewildered look and say, none. Babies don't die. What are you talking about? Except the occasional rare rattlesnake bite or trauma, like a horse kicking a kid in the head, something like that. Total health. Because of the terrain, the Native Americans were eating and living in a way that encouraged healthy mitochondria. And in these big industrialized cities, there was lack of sunlight, lack of fresh vegetables and meat and food, and lack of healthy milk, and just the squalor of poor sanitation and all that. And when we cleaned all that up and figured out how to bring in the fresh fruit and vegetables and quality animal products from the countryside into the city, and we cleaned up the sanitation and sewage and all that, all of a sudden the mortality rate suddenly dropped 99%. Before the vaccines for all these germs came out. It's all about the terrain. It's all about stewarding the terrain, which means steward your mitochondria. And we'll talk more about the details of how to do that and the consequences of not doing that. We'll talk about Robert S. Farmer, MD. He's a physician, I think, in New York. I forget where, but he's got a book called Cure Diabetes, Parkinson's, and Chronic Diseases. And a lot of this book is talking about parasites. Why do parasites move in? Because of disrupted terrain. Once they move in, if you don't have good immune function and good terrain, then they will set up shop and they will start to get your copper to an unusable state, and now we're just a snowball cascading effect. All the metabolic consequences of not having bioavailable copper, as Morley just mentioned, with demyelination and all these autoimmune diseases. So we'll continue on with this conversation when we come back from the break. Stick with us. I'm visiting with Morley Robbins, rcp123.org. I'm Dr. Ben Edwards. You're the cure.
Welcome back into You're the Cure with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, right here on AM 580 and 95.9 FM. Special guest Morley Robbins here on the program as well. Check out VeritasMedical.com for our archived shows and other important information to help you regain your health. That's VeritasMedical.com.
All right, we are back with Morley Robbins. So excited to have Morley. Always good to get some insight from the metabolic mineral world, mitochondria world. Morley sent me a text this morning. It really simplifies this whole thing. I'm going to just basically read it. It's this, you know, the root of all this. And like I already mentioned, the root cause protocol really is trying to just drill down to, we've got to get the nutrition back in the body. Just do that. Remove the things that impede the mitochondria from functioning like they're designed to function, and then give those mitochondria through the diet or supplementation of that diet high quality nutrients that it needs to function. It's that simple. You want your Ferrari to run well like it was designed to do? Well, give it the right inputs and avoid putting honey or high fructose corn syrup, I'll say, in the gas tank. I mean, it's that simple. And it's hard for people to wrap their mind around something that simple. But here's what's happened with the low fat diet that obviously was wrong, and the research is overly clear now. But you lose fat soluble vitamins. Morley mentioned retinol. That's vitamin A, fat-soluble vitamin. You're going to lose that in a low-fat diet. The standard American diet doesn't have the nutrients, or enough of them, if any of the nutrients that the mitochondria needs. Copper's been lost because of farming techniques primarily, and dietary habits that have changed, like not eating organ meat and growing our food 1,000 miles away, picking it early before it's vine ripened, shipping it 1,000 miles into your grocery store, you know, doing whatever they have to do chemically to let it make it look pretty that 1,000 miles later. All of those techniques have removed the copper and other minerals, but copper is a big one. And when you add in high fructose corn syrup and excess iron to the diet, that further disrupts the ability of the body to absorb and utilize the copper. You add glyphosate to the farming. I didn't mention that. That's one of the farming techniques. Glyphosate's a chelator. It gobbles up copper and renders it not utilizable by the plant or us. And then you start throwing in supplements that synthetic forms, not native natural forms, like vitamin D. It's a great example. And I want to spend just a second on this. So there's articles showing vitamin D, you reduce mortality 64% or something. I saw a study, I think, out of Israel, maybe. When you use vitamin D supplementation in the hospitalized COVID patient, and that there's these low vitamin D levels correlate with increased mortality and all that. So let's break that down just a little bit, because here's an example of half-truth and shoot from the hip, and we kind of see something here. Let's jump to a conclusion. Low vitamin D, this is my intuition and gut feeling on it, but then there's also data to support it. Morley could quote the exact studies. When your vitamin D level is low, you're going to be correlated, you're going to be more susceptible to cancer and heart disease and Alzheimer's and COVID-19 death and ICU admission. Is it because the vitamin D is low as the sole root cause? Or is the vitamin D low because your mitochondria is not working right? Because you have dysfunction of the body, because the body doesn't have what it needs and it has too much of what it doesn't need and it can't function right. And a consequence of that is you don't make vitamin D the right way. So there are studies that show this is a correlation. People that are sick and inflamed and don't have good healthy mitochondria, a consequence of that is their vitamin D level's low. So if you come in artificially and synthetically raise that with a pill, is that beneficial? My opinion, we'll get Morley's take on it, is there can be some short-term gain for long-term consequences that are negative, just like steroids. If you have an asthma attack, I can give you a whopping dose of prednisone and a massive anti-inflammatory, and you'll feel better real quickly. I used to give Kenalog shots all the time to my allergy patients in post. They love me because they'd feel like $1 million the next day. Steroids are powerful, and you will feel really, really good if you have rheumatoid arthritis and you get a big whopping dose of steroids. I just had a patient last week that has an autoimmune disease, a demyelinating one, and he gets his Remicade every 6 months, but they dose him with steroids the day of or a couple days or something, and he feels great those 2 days. But long-term, steroids are going to kill you. You can't be on steroids like that forever. Everyone knows that. So some short-term gain and anti-inflammatory effect with this vitamin D supplementation in the ICU, but long-term, you don't want to be on synthetic vitamin D every single day. Just like the iron we started adding to the food. They saw back in the 1940s, pregnant ladies had low hemoglobin. Uh-oh. Low hemoglobin, that's a problem. That they're anemic. We need to add iron to everyone's food to try to raise these ladies' low hemoglobin. Well, the rest of the story, as the literature clearly states, as time marches on, we got to observing and seeing, oh, wait a minute. It turns out it's normal for the human female when she's pregnant to have for her hemoglobin to go down a little bit. That's normal. And the healthiest babies, this is a study of 150,000 live births, the healthiest babies with the least complications came from mothers who had hemoglobins that were just a little bit lower. It was actually beneficial and healthy and natural and normal for the hemoglobin to go down a little bit. What did we do? We added iron to the food, and it's still in our food. So we make these assumptions and conclusions based off limited understanding of how the body works. And here we are, 100 years later, we've made lots of these assumptions and half understandings and shoot from the hip, I call it, without fully recognizing and appreciating the marvelous design and how to just steward that design and let it function how it's supposed to function. So that's a little bit of my soapbox, Morley. If you want to comment on the D or get on your soapbox, that's fine. But my main point is the body knows what to do. If we just get back to the basics of giving it what it needs and avoid what it doesn't, and stop doing these half-cocked, arrogant, we think we're so intellectual and understand things, and let's throw a bunch of iron and synthetic vitamin D in the mix. I mean, we're the sickest country in the world. Over the last 100 years, we went from healthiest to sickest. So let's wake up and take a look a little bit about these recommendations we so quickly throw out there.
Yeah, I don't want to dwell on the D issue, but it's just one that I think is noteworthy. I actually have 18 different studies talking about 18 different reasons why vitamin D is not what people think it is. Just so much disinformation and deception around it. But But I think the most significant is that there's a very powerful protein that's made in the liver called metallothionein. And metallothionein is designed to bind up metals, but it has a preferential attraction to copper. And so when active D begins to build in the body, which is going to happen when you start to take lots of supplemental D, the active D instructs the liver to make more metallothionein. Now, why is that a problem? Because metallothionein binds up copper 1,000 times stronger than it binds up zinc. So people can't relate to 1,000 times stronger. Think of somebody you know that's twice as strong as you, maybe three times as strong as you. But the idea of 1,000 times stronger is like basically vitamin D, active D, is putting copper into jail and it can't get out. Mm-hmm. And then that is going to have significant long-term effects. The other side of it is people were told to take high doses of zinc. What does zinc do? Zinc activates metallothionein. Ding, ding, ding. Same problem. And people don't realize that all of the recommendations coming through COVID were really designed to destroy the bioavailability of copper. That's a very unsettling proposition. But again, they knew back in 2008 that copper was the solution. So they wanted to make sure that it wasn't even close to being available to fight the SARS virus. So it's just, there's a side to this that the average person is not going to know about. And they've got to get past the mainstream media and the mainstream message and start being a little more discerning about what did my ancestors do in order to stay healthy. And I think we have been misled and misfed by the organization. Whoever the organization is, I don't know whether that's the government or what, I don't know who it is. But we've not been getting full factual information. And I think it's important for people to realize that there are credible sources of it, conversations like this. There are designated websites where people can go. But the general internet search is going to tap people back into a false narrative that has been very misleading for people for a number of generations.
Yeah. Well, it seems pretty clear, logical. At the minimum, we should be able to have a very robust debate on the fact that the pharmaceutical industry is very powerful and very rich, and they're by far and away multiple times more as far as lobbyists in D.C., donations, money. I mean, oil and gas, someone said, when I was talking to someone, they said, well, oil and gas, I'm sure, is number one, and oil and gas was like number eight. I mean, pharmaceuticals were number one by a mile. It was a landslide. So if media, now that pharmaceuticals can advertise in media, because they used to not be able to, it's not just that the commercials are there telling you, go talk to your doctor about buying this drug. That's not the main deal. The main deal is those companies, media companies, live off of, Wade could talk about this, live off advertisement. So are you going to let a lot of information come onto your news show or in your programming that starts to shine a light on the fact that you're number one advertiser? There might be some issues there. That we've got to consider that. I mean, if I was a politician, that'd be my first thing to do. Cut the advertising. Pharmaceuticals, no more. Done. Zero. Why would you even do that anyways? I mean, a lay person listening to a commercial, who really gets anything out of that? That should be a discussion between your personal physician and you, and your individual risk benefit assessment, and you discuss the pharmaceuticals that are available for your condition, and you decide, but with you and your doctor. But I think Roger Ailes told Robert F. Kennedy Jr., non-election years, 70% of their advertising revenue is pharmaceutical. So if you got your number one lobbyist giving your politicians money is pharmaceutical and your media is pharmaceutical driven and the medical school research and the dollars, I mean, 2 + 2 = 4. We can't hide ourselves in the sand, put our head in the sand for much longer on this deal. We need to get a hold of this industry, is my opinion. And then when you see someone like Dr. Pierre Corey and his colleagues at the FLCC Alliance, that's the COVID-19criticalcare.com website I mentioned, he's been highly censored. And the censorship has been medical presentations. He goes through study after study after study, and he goes through the details of the study. And he will tell you, is this just a case review? Is it an observational? Is it a randomized controlled? Was it placebo? Was it double blind? He goes through all that, and he tells the pros and cons of each different study. And he's collected all these studies. It's a pure, it's like I was at a medical school lecture, censored. His colleague, Dr. Paul Merrick, who's kind of the world-renowned guru of ICU care of sepsis and acute respiratory distress syndrome and pulmonary critical care. This guy's, I don't know how many hundreds of articles he's published and co-authored. And here's a quote from Dr. Paul Merrick, founding member of the FLCC. If people had followed our approach, meaning ivermectin, and they do other things in their approach, but mainly this was ivermectin. If people had followed our approach, it would have saved tens of thousands of lives. But no one has listened, and it's a tragedy. So these doctors have been out there. Lots of doctors have been out there trying to talk and spread the message. But the only way the general public's going to hear it is if their local news, newspaper, and national news programs that everyone's getting information from puts it on their shows. And Dr. Paul Merrick, to my knowledge, has not been on any local or national shows, nor any of his colleagues in this frontline critical care. These are frontline doctors in the ICU. The public should have at least heard about it so that they could be aware of this and talk to their doctor about it. Make a personalized decision. I'm looking at an article, Broward County doctor using ivermectin off-label combo on COVID-19 patients. It is working and secures county health protocol approval. So this is an article from Trial Site News. The date of this article, April 23rd, 2020. There was a doctor, Dr. Jean-Jacques Rater, R-A-J-T-E-R. He probably saw that very initial study, I think is out of Australia. It was in a test tube only. It was in a petri dish in the lab. It's not in a human, so that's therefore not a really viable thing you can consider as a doctor, is what the NIH would tell you. But he saw in that study a 5,000-fold decrease in viral replication when ivermectin was added to cell cultures with COVID-19. So he knew ivermectin's safety profile. It's affordable. You know, why not just try it? So we did. That should have been plastered all over every news media. So to me, Morley, it's a media issue. It's a censorship issue. It's a money issue. Always follow the money, follow the money, follow the money.
Yeah.
Seems pretty clear.
I think a basic question people need to be asking is, statins are now a $1 trillion industry worldwide.
The cholesterol drugs.
Yes, the cholesterol drug statins, and of course I spell them $TATIN. But $1 trillion is a lot of money. I think you, Wade, and I could do pretty nicely if we could split $1 trillion. I think we'd be pretty comfortable. At least I would. I won't speak for you and Wade. But the thing is, people need to question that one drug alone. That chemical appeared on the planet the same time copper did. That's been around a long time. And why are people being told to lower their cholesterol when we know that 66 conditions, nervous conditions, stem from the ability to recycle cholesterol to make myelin? It makes no sense. And again, you put your finger on the pulse. It is media and money interests that need to be questioned so that people can regain and retain their health. And they've got to question the narrative. They've got to be willing to ask more questions and demand better answers. Because I think we have been horribly misled by the system, by the media and the moneyed interests, as you call it.
Yeah. Well, and just, I probably shouldn't bring this up because we're out of time, but I do have to say, for informed consent purposes, because I have so many people call and ask about the vaccine. I had a professional, a PA, a health professional, call and tell me, ask me, isn't there attenuated virus in that COVID-19 vaccine? Which, of course, there's not. But the point is, she didn't know. She wasn't aware. She's not being educated. And I don't know, you know, doctors around the country, I'd love to take a poll and just ask some simple questions. True or false, there's an attenuated virus or any virus in this vaccine? True or false, this vaccine has been shown to reduce transmission of COVID-19. True or false, this vaccine has been shown to decrease hospitalizations. True or false, this vaccine has been shown to decrease death. I talk to so many people that just assume, oh yeah, I'm going to get my shot so I can go hug my granddaughter again, or I can get back to my bowling league, or whatever. We can get back to life. Okay?
Yep.
Well, the studies show this doesn't decrease transmission of the virus or infection. It's maybe will decrease severity of symptoms a little bit, relative risk versus absolute risk. If you look at relative risk, it's somewhere in the 19 to 38%, but absolute risk, it's like less than 1% reduction in symptoms based off Pfizer data. So it doesn't reduce any of these things. Well, let's go look at ivermectin. 83% reduction in mortality and reduction in hospitalization, reduction. There's a prophylactic study out of Egypt. 800 healthcare workers took a dose of ivermectin once a week for 10 weeks. 400 healthcare workers did not take it. They followed them for these 10 weeks. 0% of the people that took ivermectin got COVID. 58% of the group that didn't take ivermectin got COVID. That is one study that would make you conclude, while maybe ivermectin reduces transmissibility and infection rates and hospitalization rates, all the things you would want a vaccine to do. And there's multiple other prophylactic studies. You can go listen to Dr. Pierre Corey talk about it in his presentation, COVID-19criticalcare.com. My point is, there's a robust discussion and debate that should be going on, and it's not going on. It's a very limited and censored discussion, and that's unfortunate, but people need to wake up to this. It's not conspiracy theory. It's just the way it is. It's the way the world works. The love of money, the root of all evil. The love of money. Money's not bad. The love of it, where you will sacrifice the truth and sacrifice your fellow man's health and well-being and even their life for your own gain. And we could go on and on, Morley. I know I'm probably over time now. Wade, he hadn't cut me off yet. So, I mean, people just knew the conflict of interest on the vaccine at Moderna and Fauci and the patent and how much is...
That's right.
It's just, it never ends. It goes on and on and on. It's like mind-boggling, bizarro world we're living in, Twilight Zone. We've got a vaccine that's gazillions of dollars, and Fauci's getting half of it, and it doesn't reduce transmissibility, infection rates, or hospitalization rates, or death rates. What? And you've got a $2 drug over here that's won the Nobel Prize, and it's been around for 60 years, and it's very, very safe, and 0% of the doctors that took it in Egypt got infected, and it lowers even when you are sick and in the ICU, because there's an anti-inflammatory effect to it, because by the time you're in the ICU, the virus really isn't the problem, it's all the inflammation. And there's an anti-inflammatory effect to ivermectin, and it reduces death rate even in that setting of the super sick. Why isn't this just on every billboard? I drove to town today and there's a billboard, vaccinate now. It's everywhere. I was skiing in Taos this weekend with the family, same thing. We don't have our vaccine yet, so mask up. I mean, these were like billboards and public awareness signs, and I'm just like, oh my word. The whole system is contaminated. Okay, sorry. We better end this thing, good, Morley.
Good connecting of dots, Ben. Good connecting of dots.
Well, I just want to encourage everyone, you can be well. Even with all this dysfunction in our modern diet, farming techniques, and life, and all this craziness, the body's so resilient. Just start doing the one thing. Just go to rcp123.org, look at starts and stops, and just start implementing. You can do it. And over time, it's not about being perfect. Over time, you can just add more and more and more. If you're super sick, I'd suggest you do it a little quicker. But it's not about perfection. It's about, let's just start doing something to get you, your family, your kids, your grandkids, your neighbors back on the right track of eating and living like we used to, and we will be healthy like we used to be, the healthiest country in the world before this massive love of money took over ag and pharmaceutical and medical and education and government and every institution there is, I think. We're at the pinnacle of this now, and now it's time, and it's turning. People are waking up, and it's turning. So be encouraged. More and more are waking up, and health is just around the corner. So thank you for joining us today, Morley. Thank you, listeners, for listening. We will do it again. Morley, final parting word.
Keep it simple. I think the solution to all of this is just going back to the basics, and I think you said it well, and it's really a wholesale adoption of an ancestral diet is going to serve a lot of people in ways that they can't. So I think what I would end on.
Yep, I agree wholeheartedly, 100%. Check out Morley's website, rcp123.org. You can check out archive shows and other things at veritasmedical.com. I'm Ben Edwards. You're the Cure.
All right. You've been listening to You're the Cure with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com, for archive shows and other important information to help you regain your health. That's veritasmedical.com.